Good evening, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herriwood Fenton and I'm bringing this show to you on the 12th of July 2012, broadcasting from Sydney, Australia. It's great to have your company today. I've got a lot of stories packed in for the show today. I've got a guest in the second hour who is going to be talking to us about some very important free speech issues. And when I say very important, believe me, it really is very important. It is actually critical. It is a situation which has developed in the last few months in Australia concerning free speech about health matters, about health treatments. And this is related to the use of vaccines and also to other treatments for cancer. And it is really one of those critical test cases of a democracy. You know, do we have a democracy? Do we have free speech? Or are we actually now in a new type of system where the government can just say, sorry, you're not allowed to talk about that. That's a forbidden topic. And our guest who will be bringing us information on that topic is Leon Pittard, who has a show here in Australia, similar to mine. That's called Fair Dinkum Radio. So a really, really important interview coming up in the second hour. So do stay tuned for that. Now, in the rest of this hour, I've got a number of important breaking stories, both in Australia and around the world, that I would like to talk about. And I'll be running through our Twitter stream, giving you our latest headlines from there, and our Facebook stream and other things that have come to my notice over the last couple of weeks. So I hope you'll enjoy it. I've usually got a variety of stories that are not widely known, and I try to keep my eye on things through various news feeds. Now, I just want to briefly begin with the Julian Assange saga. I try to keep up to date with that every week. Of course, Julian Assange is currently in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, and he is trying to get asylum in Ecuador, and the president of Ecuador has indicated that he is extremely sympathetic to that cause, but he has now been locked in the embassy there in London for more than 2 weeks, and it is now reaching a kind of a critical point, and I'm a little concerned as to what is going to actually occur, because of course the US government is probably putting enormous pressure on Ecuador not to allow this asylum bid, and there will be all kinds of punishments that Ecuador will suffer if it actually does take Julian on board. There is also the problem of getting Julian Assange out of the country. I mean, he's in the UK, and under the extradition warrant, he can be arrested at any time because he did not follow his house arrest guidelines, which meant that he had to report to a police station every day, and he obviously went to the Ecuadorian embassy to seek refuge and stopped doing that. If he steps outside the door of the Ecuadorian embassy, he can be arrested straight away. What are they going to do if they grant him asylum? I mean, are they going to spirit him away in a car? Are they going to try and secretly get him out of the country? I don't know. It's a bit of a mystery. Excuse me, I've got a little bit of a cold today, but or maybe even hay fever, I'm not quite sure, just suddenly got a bit of an attack there, just having a bit of trouble there breathing. Now, there is a rally for Julian Assange, which is going to be held at Sydney Town Hall at 1 p.m. on the 15th of July, and there's a Facebook page for that rally, and that's also going to be on our Twitter stream. And a number of speakers are going to be speaking at that event. We've got lawyer and human rights activist Kelly Tranter. We've got Secretary of the New South Wales Fire Brigade Employees Union and a number of other important peace activists and people in Australia. So, of course, Julian Assange, being an Australian, has a pretty big support network here in Australia and, of course, around the world. And, of course, WikiLeaks is a very significant and problematic development for the powers that be, because they present a way in which information can get out that governments cannot control. Now, I personally don't think WikiLeaks has really done anything that dramatic in terms of what they've released. I think the two significant things that WikiLeaks has released were the Baghdad video that showed the massacre in 2007 that was a cameraman and a few other people that were killed by helicopter gunships, which, of course, was a horrific thing, and it was very important and very worthwhile that that got out. But, of course, it turned out that that particular event did not breach any military guidelines. No laws were broken, no military laws, no laws of combat. There were no investigations. Basically, the US government and the military, apart from locking up Bradley Manning, who was accused of leaking that information, they said, well, you know, there's nothing, we didn't do anything wrong here. This is the way we operate. You know, we thought those people were insurgents, and one of them was actually carrying an AK-47. So we opened fire on them, and this is what they do. This is what the American military does in combat situations. Get over it, suck it up. That's pretty much the policy of the government. But of course, in relation to those who leak the information, total crackdown, total merciless punishment. And Julian Assange has not been indicted for releasing that information, but there are calls for him to be indicted under the Espionage Act. And we have heard that there is a secret grand jury which has convened to try and bring these charges against Julian Assange. It's being done in secret, and again, this is another indication of the insidious nature of the suppression of free speech. And of course, another reason why I continually bring up the subject of Julian Assange is that his incarceration in the UK since December 2010 is a complete breach of universal human rights, rule of law, due process. He's never been charged with any crime in any country. There are allegations against him, merely allegations. And on the basis of these allegations, the Swedish prosecutors have managed to, through the corrupt structures of the EU, to raise an EU extradition warrant. Again, a totally undemocratic, outrageous construct, a bureaucratic construct, which was enabled by a number of laws which were passed in Europe in the wake of the 9/11 attacks in 2001, as a matter of fact. And these actually allow countries to extradite people from other countries, even without charges, even without evidence being presented, simply on the say-so of a prosecutor, and that should not be allowed. And the authorities in the UK should have said, well, we're not going to take this seriously. Show us the charges. Make it a real thing. Then we'll look at it. But the way this system now works is it's just geared in favour of power over the individual. It's geared in favour of suppressing people's rights. It's creeping totalitarianism. And we're finding that throughout the Western democracies, as they're called, we're finding this creeping totalitarianism where bodies, bureaucratic organisations, government agencies, overstepping the lines of what they were originally constructed to do, and the law, the system of checks and balances, not stepping in favour of the individual, but caving in, continually caving in to the demands of government. And of course, behind government, we have an array of forces that are largely corporate, largely multinational globalist organisations, which benefit from the control structures, and they also influence government and pressure government to do their bidding. And of course, that is the classic marriage between corporations and government, which has been defined as fascism. And this is often said on the internet. I don't really need to belabor the point. It was said by Mussolini back in the 1930s. Fascism is a marriage of government and big business. And what does that really mean? Well, what it really means is the crushing of the individual. It means that there is a that there is a power structure, a superstructure, which is the controlling force in society. The individual is part of basically the masses of drones who work within that, who have limited amount of freedom. They've got enough freedom to be able to sort of go to the supermarket, make a choice between one product or another product. They can flip the channels on the TV and they can look at different TV channels. They can, you know, they can either be left or they can be right. They can be for gay marriage or they can be against gay marriage. You know, there are certain there's a certain spectrum. And of course, you know, this was described as the manufacturing of consent by Noam Chomsky, where a spectrum of allowed free speech is set up and you've got to stay within that. Those who step out of that, and even in the case, as we've seen with Wikipedia, setting up a mechanism to allow information to be leaked, which is completely outside of the control of government monopolized media cartels, is not to be tolerated. And of course, in the second hour, I'll be bringing you the very, very chilling and disturbing story about how the government here in Australia has decided that information about alternative health treatments must not be allowed to leak out. And they're completely abusing a system of checks and balances, which is just a regulatory body, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, whose job is simply to make sure that products are not faulty, to protect the consumer. But they've used this organization to shut down people who have websites criticizing vaccines or websites that link to a DVD that tells you about an alternate cure for cancer. They want to shut that down. So on the one hand, we need to expose these individual stories. We need to really analyze them and continually refer back to them and track them. And that's what I do on this show. But while we're doing that, we really need, and this is actually far more important, to analyze the structural thing that we're in. Because they will continually move the goalposts. They won't stop at one particular point. And this is when you see them completely misusing or abusing their powers, as they've done with Julian Assange, you actually realize that this is a test, this is a taste of things to come. And we will be going to break now shortly, but I'm going to come back straight after the break with more subjects in this line. And please stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And my name is Hereward Fenton. It's really good to be talking to you today. We'll be right back after this break. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, broadcasting to you from Sydney, Australia, and we are going to be going through a barrage of information in the next 45 minutes. And I do, however, welcome your calls. If you would like to call into the show, the numbers are, if you're calling from Australia, you can call for a local call cost anywhere in Australia. And the number is 1-300-153-372. That's 1-300-153-372. And if you're calling in the US, the number is 512-646-1984. So it would be lovely to hear from you. Now, I'm going to get into some news relevant to Australia. I would like to just bring you a clip here from Melinda Taylor, who was an Australian lawyer who was detained in Libya. And she was sent to Libya to actually represent the son of Muammar Gaddafi, who is being held in Libyan custody. And she works for the International Criminal Court. And of course, the International Criminal Court is a body that is set up to facilitate, you know, the bringing to justice of crimes of an international scale, where particularly, you know, political leaders, high-profile figures are being charged. The Libyan transitional government is being extremely resistant to any kind of due process being given to the son of Muammar Gaddafi. They've actually been blocking him even being able to get interviews with lawyers. And this really just highlights the fact that the regime that has been set up in Libya is completely, completely kind of barbaric. Basically, it was a brutal takeover facilitated by NATO, facilitated by a massive aerial bombardment. And the people who are now running the show are largely just criminal gangs. And there, of course, is that element of the Islamic extremists. But again, as we've seen so often in the past, these appear to be largely co-opted proxies of US foreign policy. And we see them also in Syria, leading the destruction of the Syrian regime. And we see them very prominently in Egypt as well, even in Egypt calling for the destruction of the pyramids. I mean, what a ridiculous thing. You know, they're out of control. I think that the way that these Islamic extremists are portrayed as being, you know, highly sort of pious and religious fundamentalists is also completely incorrect. I think they shelter behind that theme as a cover for being just extremists. And probably a lot of them are strictly just in the pay. They're even just like mercenaries, really. And the world is full of people who will do this type of thing. And, of course, having an extremist ideology is a great cover for being able to basically, you know, justify these types of activities and even to bring in a lot of people to do your bidding for you who are just sort of co-opted patsies. Now, Melinda Taylor is an Australian, and she was actually detained in Libya for 26 days. And the reason she was detained, she was sent there with a delegation, and her job was to defend the son of Muammar Gaddafi. But the Libyan authorities would not even grant her an interview. Like, she was completely blocked from her client, and she complained about this. The first time she went there, she complained very loudly. The second time she went there, they simply arrested her on arrival, and then they accused her of espionage. So I want to actually play you the audio that actually it's a video interview, and you can see it on our website. But this was an interview done with Melinda Taylor straight after her release, and she's a woman of really strong principle, and I really just think it's really important to see that there are people out there who are genuine, and I believe she's one of them. Because, see, she really pressed for the rights of her client, and I think most people in this game know that, no, you don't do that. You just bend over. You do whatever they want, because all these lawyers, all these people who are working for these organizations, they're getting paid pretty well, and they know it's all a game. They know it's all fixed. Occasionally, you get someone who really tries to do their job, who really has principles. And I believe that Melinda Taylor is such a person. So I will play to you now some of the interview here of Melinda Taylor addressing The Hague.
Good afternoon, everyone. You have no idea how wonderful it is to be here today to speak to you all. As you may be aware, myself and three other ICC colleagues, Helen Asaf, Alexander Kodakov, and Esteban Peralta Lacia, were detained for 26 days in Zintan by the Libyan authorities from 7th of June until the 2nd of July. On the first day of our detention, we were informed that all four of us were detained under the authority of the Libyan Prosecutor General. On the second day, although we were initially informed that Mr. Kodakov and Mr. Losia could leave, we were subsequently notified that all four of us were arrested and that our continued detention had been confirmed by the chairperson of the National Transitional Council, Mr. Mustafa Abdul Jalil. I would like to note, though, that Captain Al-Najmi and the Zintan Brigade, who were responsible for implementing our detention, treated us with respect and dignity and were very attentive to our requirements. Nonetheless, during these 26 days of detention, we were never provided with an order or decision concerning the legal basis for our arrest and detention, or for the search and seizure of privileged and confidential ICC documents, or for the breach of Libya's promise to the ICC to implement a privileged visit with Mr. Saif al-Islam Gaddafi. The Prosecutor General initially indicated to us that we would not be entitled to have any communications with our family or our consular representatives. It appears that through the diplomatic initiatives of the ICC and our consular representatives, we were eventually entitled to receive a monitored consular visit and 1 5-minute conversation with our families. As you can imagine, speaking to my 2-year-old daughter under such circumstances was both an emotional lifeline and heartbreaking. It is immensely difficult to be detained under such circumstances, but I was incredibly lucky to have the emotional support and good humour of my fellow ICC detained staff, Helen, Esteban and Alexander. The fact that President Song personally came to Zintan to welcome us with his wonderful smile also means a great deal to me. As you may be aware, it has been announced that the ICC will conduct an investigation in relation to the allegations made by the Libyan authorities. And I would like to note that on the very first day of our arrest, I explicitly informed the Libyan authorities that if they had any concerns regarding my misconduct, that they had the right to file a complaint in accordance with the procedure set out in the ICC Code of Conduct for Counsel, but that I had full immunity from arrest, detention, or any other investigative action taken against me, and measures taken by the Libyans in that regard would violate international law. I would also like to unequivocally state that I believe that my actions were fully consistent with my legal obligations under the ICC statute and rules and the Code of Professional Conduct for Counsel. Irrespective of any issues concerning my own personal conduct, the rights of my client, Mr. Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, were irrevocably prejudiced during my visit to Zintan. Amongst other things, the Libyan authorities deliberately misled the defence concerning whether the visit with Mr. Gaddafi would be monitored. They also seized documents which were covered by legal professional privilege and ICC protective order.
Okay, we're going to just have to pause it there because we're going to break. I'd like to actually bring you some more of this speech after the break. The stuff she's getting into now is extremely important. So please stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be back right after this break.
I will not go down under the ground. Cause somebody tells me that death's coming round, and I will not carry myself down to die. When I go to my grave, my head will be high. Let me die in my footsteps before I go down.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News. And I will not go down under the ground. You know, I'm gonna keep my head held high. I've decided that I'm gonna go down standing up, not on my knees. And it only takes a certain percentage of the general population to make that decision, to basically ensure that we get through this. Because things are going to start getting pretty tough soon. I don't know exactly when. We've had plenty of warnings about it, though. A lot of those warnings, like Bob Dylan says in that song, you know, are threats. Because the people who are running things, the people who got all the money and all the power and all the military, they kind of want us to be afraid. And they're constantly telling us that there's this terrible thing coming, you know, there's this terrible threat coming. And that's actually to make us cower. That's actually to make us bow down. It's a mechanism. It's a mechanism of actually turning human beings who are by nature really a predator, you know, an alpha predator, the human being, but turning them into more of a herd animal. And that's done through fear. And I see it everywhere I go. I see that humanity has been turned into herd animals, completely against our nature. And of course, there's a two-tier system where you've got a predatory class who sees themselves as the controlling class and the herd drone class. And the relationship between the two is maintained by this constant fear. And the fear is on many levels. Sometimes it's just you're really afraid that you won't be able to pay your bills, you won't be able to pay your mortgage or your rent. And, you know, if you step out of line, if your views start to diverge too much from the mainstream, you're afraid that you won't fit in anymore, you'll lose your job, you won't be able to pay your bills, you'll be out on the street, you'll die, you know. I mean, because, you know, when you get into that type of situation, you do sometimes die. It is actually quite tough. You know, people's health deteriorates extremely. And, of course, you know, in the United States, I don't have to tell our listeners, of course, everyone's well aware of it. I mean, the number of homeless and the situation there has become extreme over the past few years since the general financial crisis. In Australia, a much smaller population, but we still do have a lot of people living on the edge, on the breadline, and a lot of people's health is deteriorating. We have huge problems with obesity in our society, which is largely a product of insufficient nutrition because people just feed themselves on carbohydrates and fried foods, and that's largely because they can't afford to eat properly. We have rampant problems with, you know, diabetes and various other sort of chronic disorders like that that are related to diet and standard of living. So anyway, I won't continue down that track, but just bear in mind that we have to hold our heads up. We have to oppose the ideology that would make us afraid. And in some cases, yes, we do have to realize that there will be difficult trials ahead, but we will actually only make it worse if we accede to the demand to basically bow down or go down into the ground and hide when they tell us to. Now, I would like to continue with the press conference here from Melinda Taylor. Melinda Taylor, of course, the Australian ICC lawyer who was detained in Libya in complete breach of international law. And this is a very serious violation of international law. The ICC is an organisation that has been set up to investigate crimes against humanity. And, of course, the reason she was detained was because she was actually trying to represent her client. The Libyans don't want her client represented. Look at what happened to his father. He was, in the end, he was caught in a underground drain. He was paraded in front of crowds of deranged people and beaten and then sodomized. That's actually what happened. Those were the last moments of Muammar Gaddafi, and then we saw his dead body. Okay, there is no justice. Of course, Gaddafi was a dictator, and I don't say that he was a good man. I don't know that he was a bad man, though, and I don't know enough about him to be able to say that he was either a good man or a bad man. Of course, there are many dictators in the world. Some of them are relatively benign. What I do know is that Gaddafi had been trying to establish a gold-backed currency for the whole of Africa. And I do know that he redistributed a lot of the wealth that Libya had to his people. There were all kinds of free services that Libyan people were entitled to, including free education and free medicine. And, of course, Libya was an incredibly rich country, having, I think, the world's third largest oil reserves. There was plenty of money to go around. So even if he was a dictator and even if he did concentrate a lot of power, he still did redistribute a lot of that to his people, and more so than you'll find in a lot of other countries. I believe he didn't toe the line with the Western globalist plans. I believe that his intention to create a gold-backed currency was probably the last straw in a number of things. Of course, he had cooperated over the investigation of the Lockerbie bombing. But then towards the end of 2010, it had become clear that the man who had been convicted of the Lockerbie bombing, who was a Libyan, was actually falsely convicted. And there was massive protests and massive inquiries in Scotland over that. And there were people of extreme high qualification. We're talking surgeons, doctors, lawyers, who had said that the evidence against the convicted Lockerbie bomber was incorrect. The English authorities then simply decided to release him, and this, of course, produced a massive focus on Libya again, and this sort of became the lead-up to the intervention in Libya. So, of course, you know, Gaddafi was an independent person. He just simply didn't do as he was told, and I think that is where it becomes problematic for the cartels that run the Western world. So let me just continue now with the press conference from Melinda Taylor, and she's been detailing here the violations that the Libyan transitional government had made against international law and her detention in a Libyan holding cell.
Yes. It is the position of the defence that these recent events have completely underscored that it would be impossible for Mr. Saif al-Islam Gaddafi to be tried in an independent and impartial manner in Libyan courts. The defence intends to place these matters before the ICC pretrial chamber in the defence response to Libya's request to have the proceedings in Libya, and our response will be filed on the 11th of July. It is ultimately a responsibility of the pretrial chamber to decide this issue. When we were in detention, we had very little idea of the ongoing processes concerning our release. It was therefore extremely overwhelming upon my release to discover the outpouring of international concern for our safety and welfare. I would therefore like to express my utmost appreciation and gratitude to the staff and judges of the International Criminal Court who strive to secure our release. Specifically, the ICC staff counsel were truly amazing, and I was very touched by the ICC staff, judges, and defense who have inundated us with such kind.
I'll just leave it there. There's actually more detail in there, but obviously she's just there thanking the people that had helped her. But there was a lot of help that she didn't get. There is a brief mention of the Australian Foreign Minister Bob Carr in her in her thank yous, but no reference to the Australian government per se. No reference to Julia Gillard. Basically, the Australian government really did very little to help her. Bob Carr personally made a number of efforts, and of course he's to be commended for that, but it's quite notable in her speech. She says nothing about the Australian government, and I do believe that if the Australian government had actually been really trying to help her, she would have thanked them for it. Again, another indication of, unfortunately, the Australian government's complicity in this utterly criminal enterprise of global domination. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this break. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Hereward Fenton. It's great to be talking to you today. We've just been going through the story there about the detained lawyer Melinda Taylor, who was detained in Libya. And, you know, this situation with the sort of breach of international laws, I mean, you know, we had all these complete violations of due process in terms of international relations. But this is sort of on a global scale, mirroring what we're seeing, violations of due process on a personal individual level in terms of the way people are being treated within society. And it's just an incredible sort of mirroring that we see. Like it's like the entire structure, the entire fabric of our society, And this is happening in multiple countries at the same time, is moving in this direction towards tyranny. And you just sit back and you look at it and you go, my God, it's like watching the Titanic sink or something. You know, it's like this amazing, unstoppable process that's gradual, though. It's like it's gradually happening right before your eyes, and as you see various parts of it, you know, watching the Titanic go down. And it's like, well, now the bow's going down, and you see all the chairs are sliding, and it's like, wow, you know, what can we do? And we're in this position of being able to predict it, being able to see it, being able to talk about it. You know, we can't even get the lifeboats deployed. You know, at the moment, we do need to get the lifeboats deployed. And I don't know whether we can stop the ship sinking, but anyway, interesting analogy there. Now, let me just move on with some more stories. I've got a story here from London, and once again, illustrating the same pattern. The London Olympic Games has brought forward the most extreme security apparatus that I think we've ever seen for probably any major event. It's like every time they have an Olympic Games, every time they have a big event, they increase the draconian security apparatus. And of course, we saw just last week a bus was stopped on the highway, and everyone was pulled out, and they had everyone sitting locked in sort of police interrogation mode, all separated from each other, simply because someone had a vapor, one of those electronic vapor cigarettes on a bus, and it caused this national event. It was on national television, helicopters hovering over. And of course, it was nothing. It was absolutely nothing. But again, that's the sort of atmosphere of extreme paranoia that that they're creating with these Olympic Games. Now, one other such unfolding story is over the use of missiles. And there has been a tenants group who has been opposing the positioning of surface-to-air missiles on the top of their residential tower block. And I have a story here from the BBC. The missile tenants lose legal ruling. Residents have lost their High Court battle to prevent surface-to-air missiles being stationed on the roof of their tower block during the Olympics. They had said having them on Fredwig Tower in Leytonstone would make them a terrorist target, and that seems reasonable to me. I mean, you know, if you're going to be putting missiles on top of an apartment building, well, if I was one of the bad guys and I was planning to do something bad, maybe the first thing I'd do would be target the missiles, right? And but of course, you've got to wonder, like, what are these missiles aimed at anyway? Like, what are you going to use missiles against? Well, I guess it must be planes. I mean, are they expecting London to be attacked from the air? I mean, what country in the world would dare to attack the UK from the air? I can't imagine it. And yet, there we have it. You know, missiles on the top of a residential apartment building, ladies and gentlemen. The Ministry of Defence has said the missile deployment is legitimate and proportionate. A judge said residents were under a misapprehension regarding the risks. Mr. Justice Haddon said he agreed with the Ministry of Defence that a tower block was the only suitable site for missiles, and the facts of the case were not susceptible to a sensible challenge. Well, of course, yes, I mean, an apartment block is an ideal place to put missiles, no doubt about it. I mean, it's a big, tall structure there, and you can put your missiles right on top. Of course, if you don't care at all about human beings, if you have a completely contemptuous, ruthless disregard for humanity, then there is no problem at all. And it sounds like this judge is one such person. The judge, in his ruling, added that the ministry's voluntary engagement with the community was immaculate. Again, a condescending, you know, smarmy, sarcastic kind of nonsense. And he says that the residents had simply misunderstood the facts. Yes, that's what he said in his judgment. The residents had misunderstood the facts. You know, you just don't understand that having missiles on top of your residential apartment building is actually good for you. The judge said that the Ministry of Defence had no duty to consult, and there was no unfairness about that, no unfairness at all about not consulting. And he said the law and the facts militate against the claim for judicial review. The 15-storey tower block is one of six locations selected for missiles to be stationed. Six locations, ladies and gentlemen. David Forsdick, appearing on behalf of the Ministry of Defence, said the deployment would happen imminently and will not be stayed. Yes, we will do whatever we must do to protect the realm, and you can all shut up. Reminds me of that movie, the V for Vendetta. They're all puffed up, these people. They're all in their playing their fantasy games. They're playing fantasy games of how powerful and important they are. Okay, now the residents have a barrister who has said an appeal would be made quickly, and he said that tenants who do not want to stay may be found alternative accommodation. That's the tenants who don't want to stay in the building. The Defence Secretary was accused by the local residents' association of breaching Article 8 and Article 1 of Protocol 1 of the European Convention on Human Rights. These protect an individual's right to a private life and peaceful enjoyment of their home. The Ministry of Defence was also accused of failing to carry out an equality impact assessment in order to take into account the needs of disabled residents. Well, I might just leave that story there, but I mean, it is quite incredible. You know, missiles on top of your apartment building, and that's all about protecting people. I mean, six individual separate buildings, and that's quite an array of missiles. I just can't imagine, you know, are they expecting the Russians to attack or the Syrians? Who's going to attack the UK from the air? A fascinating question. If you have any thoughts on that, please call in and let us know. And again, the numbers to call in, if you'd like to call into the show, in Australia, 1300 153 372. In the US, 512 646 1984. Now, as I mentioned earlier, in the second hour of the show, we are getting our guest Leon Pittard on, who runs a podcast in Australia, and we're going to be talking about a really important free speech issue. And this will be an absolute landmark, a landmark for Truth News, because we're now engaging with a story that is actually could potentially bring the government against me, because the government has moved against Leon Pittard simply for covering, in a purely journalistic way, a story about an alternative cure for cancer. And they're calling it illegal advertising. Simply talking about it. Simply talking about the fact that there is a herbal cure for cancer is now called illegal advertising because that product is banned. So we'll see. And, you know, I'll let you know if I get something in the mail too, as he did, a big long legal document that he has to respond to within 14 days that you'd probably need a lawyer to engage with because it's so complex. Okay, a couple of other stories here, just very, very briefly. Just wanted to mention the story about polio in India, because this is such a travesty of truth that it's one of those things that needs to be, you need to actually go into it and you need to study it and look at the medical articles related to it. Because at first I was a bit incredulous about it. Now, I've got an article here from the Food Freedom Group, and it's titled Bill Gates and 47,500 Cases of Paralysis. In India, Monsanto hired Bollywood actors to promote genetically engineered cotton seed. And Bill Gates, heavily invested in that industry, as well as vaccines, and he hired Indian actors to promote the oral polio vaccine. Worldwide efforts in the last two decades have reduced the number of polio cases by 99%, according to the Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation. Sorry, Melinda, not Belinda. But the truth is that, in fact, rather than reducing polio cases, there has been an increase of what they call, and I just... Sorry, we have run out of time, unfortunately, but there is another condition that is a side effect of the polio vaccine, which is called acute flaccid paralysis, for which there have been 47,500 cases. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us.